This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer. This episode is going to be fantastic. This may rocket to the top of one of our favorite episodes because we have a guest that is going to be talking about a whole different version of something every single one of us uses every single day.
This is very intriguing. What problem are we solving today?
How do you make toilet paper soft?
How do you make toilet paper soft? Oh, I'm so excited to hear this. Who is our guest, Jeff?
That's right, Jennifer. Today we have the fantastic Madison Mattson, and she is a chemical engineer at a huge company making a product that we all use all the time.
Fantastic. Welcome to the show, Madison.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks, Jeff, for having me. I'm so excited to get started.
Oh, we are. Now, we already know. We heard the question, how do you make toilet paper soft? So before we go there, I want to ask, what does a chemical engineer do? And like, how does that relate to making toilet paper?
Well, that's a great question. A lot of people get confused and think that chemical engineering just has to do with just chemicals or just chemistry. But really, it's anything having to do with like the process of getting from point A to point B. And that can involve a chemical process. It can involve any kind of engineering, manipulating material. So in this case, when we're talking about toilet paper, we're going from a raw material into a finished product. And so we use a little bit of engineering, a little bit of problem solving to get from point A to point B.
Okay. Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. I definitely hear chemical engineer, and all I can imagine is different colored liquids in test tubes and a Bill Nye science guy sort of show happening. And that's all you do. But it definitely sounds like it is way more than that.
It is. Yep. So really, it's a very broad topic. Any kind of engineering, really, you're using critical thinking, problem solving. And in my case, it just happens to use a little bit of chemical properties and physical properties of the materials you're using.
So let's start from scratch. How do you pick the materials when you're making toilet paper? I mean, maybe that sounds like a dumb question, but you have to know where to start, right?
Right. And that's a good question. So really with toilet paper, so you think it's a paper product. So if you think of making paper, you're going to think of maybe printer paper, newspaper, you know, notebook paper, anything you can like write on. And, you know, paper comes from trees. We all know paper comes from trees. But in this case, so it's really papers coming from the fiber in the trees. So these little fibers are going to be the raw materials that we start with to combine them and make the paper that we want. And in this case, we're going to be using different types of different kinds of fibers to get either maybe a stack of printer paper or something soft like tissue paper or toilet paper.
Oh.
Okay. So take us one step farther between the printer paper and the softer papers like tissue or toilet paper. What gets added to either that makes the difference?
So really, if you're talking in like broad terms, we have two kinds of fibers. There's going to be softwood, which is a longer, like stronger fiber. And that's going to give you like your very like rough feeling, strong network of fibers that'll band together. And there's more surface area for them to latch on easily. That'll give you your extra strength, extra durability. And then there's a softer kind of fiber. It's called hardwood. It's a little bit of a shorter fiber, so it'll be not as strong. They won't like connect to each other as easily, won't get like that strong network to build your paper mold, but It'll give it that mint softness, fuzzy feel that you want to feel if you're a consumer. And if you're, you know, if it's tissue paper, if it's something you're putting on your face or on your body. So that's something that, you know, we'll use a little bit of a combination of the two. If you're using printer paper, you don't really care if it's soft. So you're going to less of those short, small fibers to get. That's really a combination of all those types.
Do you pick the tree that you want to get the fibers from there to make the product you're trying to make?
Yeah. So we actually, there'll be, these trees are found in different parts of the world. Eucalyptus trees are trees that you find the softer hardwood fibers in. And then we have some southern craft trees, and those will have the stronger, you know, fibers that you want for durability. But it all depends, you know, they'll grow in different parts of the planet. So you want to pick and choose which ones you're taking which from. And that's how you get those properties.
Okay. That's crazy, right? Would you ever have thought, Jeff, that you need to pick the right tree to get the soft toilet paper?
No. And honestly, I wasn't thinking about the softer papers like toilet paper or tissue coming from trees anyway. Even though it says it's a paper product, I was like, is it cotton or some other kind of fiber? But because it does come from trees, it makes me want to go check out the different paper products in my house right now and look at them really closely to see how well I can see fibers in them.
Could you do that? Can you look at the different fibers and stuff in like paper towels versus toilet paper?
Yeah. So if you look, you'll have to look really, really closely to be able to see it. But the best thing is you'll be able to feel it really easily. Even the difference between something you think like maybe toilet paper and paper towels will be pretty similar types of paper, but paper towels will feel on the surface really rough. Maybe a little bit of like lint softness on the surface. But if you compare it to something like a nice soft roll of toilet paper, you can see like the fuzzy layer where you're getting all those like soft hardwood fibers that's meant to make it soft to touch.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of fascinating now. I'm looking around my house right now and I'm seeing all the things that I want to go touch and look at that I've never paid attention to before. So as a chemical engineer, like I get the different fibers, but how do you get things to the right level of softness? Is it just how much of an ingredient you're adding to the mix?
Right. So we'll use the base idea is that we're going to take those fibers and we're going to layer them in a way that we get that strong, nice base layer on the bottom. And then we're going to layer on top of it that nice soft layer with those shorter fibers so that you still get that strong layer, but that soft part that the consumer's touching that you get to touch is what you're feeling. So you don't have to feel the scratchy part when you're using toilet paper. And if you have, you know, something that has two plies stuck together, if you use nice, expensive two ply toilet paper, it's going to be two individual pieces stuck together. And those pieces that stick together are going to be rougher to touch. So you can actually peel the two pieces apart and see that the rougher inside is a little bit rougher and stronger than that outside part.
That you
get to know when you use it.
Oh,
yep.
So I know it's not this, but I'm imagining like Velcro, right? Where the inside the Velcro, when you put them together, they're more sticky and it can be softer on the outside. Clearly it's not Velcro, but is it kind of like that, what you're talking about when you put two
plies together? Yep, a little bit. And sometimes we'll take it a step farther and we'll take those longer fibers that have the ability to latch onto each other. We'll rough them up a little bit. So think of like taking sandpaper and rubbing it against something and you get more friction and more area to grab onto, more durability in that area. So it has more surface to cling onto each other and to stick together. So it's, you get more traction to grab on instead of something that's a smooth, slippery surface and won't stick together.
Oh, wow.
Who knew this much engineering went into toilet paper?
Not me.
This is fascinating.
It is.
Like, I get that the commercials have, like, you know, cute little bear talking about the poops or talking about the little things that get stuck. I think the commercial should be the engineering that goes into making soft toilet paper.
I think those bears have an engineering degree too.
Do you actually use, is it all about the fibers? Do you use chemicals too? I mean, you don't have to tell us which ones they are if it's, you know, but so do you use chemicals to kind of make them stick together, or is it all just the fibers stick together?
Yep. So we'll form the fibers together onto a piece of fabric. So the trick is to get in those fibers in as much water as you possibly can. So it's really diluted into the water. So this is kind of where the chemical engineering part comes in. You're going to get a lot of water, lay it right on the fabric. And then the more water there is, the better the fibers can orient themselves and lay down so that they get a better formation onto that fabric. And in that, we'll use chemicals with a positive charge. So it'll be positively charged, and then it will make, it'll neutralize the negative charge of the fibers. And then in that case, they won't have, you know, we all know opposites attract.
Yes.
So we'll have, or, you know, like charges are going to, repel each other. Yep. So if you have negative fibers together, they're not going to want to attract each other. So we want to neutralize that negative charge, and we'll add a positively charged chemical to neutralize it. So then those fibers can really link onto each other and form the strongest network they possibly can.
Okay. Everyone, you're missing. Jeff and I, our mouths are on the ground. I had no idea. Did you?
There's so much engineering in wiping my bum. This is fascinating. The next time I'm in there, my wife and daughter are going to have to wait
because
I'm
going to
be busy. I'm going to be like, how's the, this is fascinating.
It is.
And I love just how every day you're talking about it. You're just like, oh yeah, we'll just add some electrically, you know, some positively charged. We'll get all the fibers to lay down the way we want them to. And I'm just like, wait a minute. Doesn't toilet paper just like go through a machine and they cut it off and there's the right number of sheets?
I wish it did.
Says?
Oh yeah.
It doesn't do that?
So the way we make the paper, so we'll make it in one big giant roll first, as big as a car. We'll make it in one humongous roll.
What?
So it'll get wrapped up. Like, and it's enough toilet paper probably for a family to use for their whole lifetime.
Oh my God.
We wrap it up in a big, big roll so that it all is easy to transport and can go on to the next step. And then it'll get converted into the smaller rolls depending on like what size we want, how many sheets we want. And to do that, we have to make sure we made it in the beginning formed is strong enough that it can be treated in the whole rest of the process to cut it, to wind it back up. That's an important part of the paper properties themselves. So we have to start there from square one.
So you make these big, huge rolls. I assume they're wider than like the normal sheets too. So you're cutting them lengthwise and like sidewise to make the little squares that we see?
Yep. We'll make big, long, long logs of toilet paper. And then there's a machine that'll come and cut them up into tiny little rolls. And then they'll perforate. So the perforations you see to tear apart.
Yeah, I was going to ask that next. How do you get those in?
Yep. So we'll have special blades that'll cut the paper. And again, we want to make sure that we made it strong enough that it'll survive the where it doesn't cut, but then it'll also be weak enough that the blade can cut it and you can tear it apart when you use it and get a nice clean tear when you need toilet paper. Right. It all comes back to the properties of the paper.
Okay, so when a company that makes toilet paper wants to make new and improved toilet paper, how does that happen? Is there a new process? Is there a new ingredient that was found in a special tree in a different forest? How does that happen?
So typically, the biggest difference that we'll have is actually the fabric that the paper forms on. We'll want to make sure that it's maybe the right pattern that the fibers can form onto it, that they can, you know, they won't lay uneven or they won't lay in a way that makes them not be able to get cut up later. So we can change that. We'll change the ratio of, you know, how many strong fibers to softer fibers we use, how many, maybe we'll mix a couple different of those types into one layer to get a little bit of softness, and maybe you're making one ply. So there's only one single sheet and you want to make, you know, triple layer. So both sides are soft and the very middle is just the strong layer. We can add more chemicals to try to neutralize it more or make them more attracted to each other. So just making, it's optimizing a process. So anything you can do to make it cheaper, make it, you know, more efficient, use less materials.
And I was going to, as you were explaining that, I was thinking the improvements really come back to the chemical engineering of it.
Right. And that's how we mentioned before, how we use a process to kind of rough up the stronger fibers to make them a little bit stronger. We can then use less of those fibers because we made them a little bit stronger than they already were. That's a part of a process that we optimize. We can use a process too with the water that we use to form the fibers. We'll recycle that water, treat it, recollect that fiber to be reused again, and then we can reuse the water. But there's a lot of raw materials and a lot of water being used to make toilet paper.
I had no idea you used that much water. Okay, so when you're doing this, like, let's use Jeff's scenario. If you are experimenting with creating a new type of toilet paper, do you do that as a chemical engineer kind of in the lab in a smaller scale and test it out before you go to the big, huge roll or something?
Yes. So that's a whole different department. If you want to do a whole different kind of line of engineering, more research-based, you can go and go in a lab. It's a toilet paper making research lab. So a smaller scale, you know, if you have a big manufacturing machine or plant, you can't, you know, just try things willy-nilly every day. So you'll try it small scale, very small scale in a lab. You can test the different chemicals on it, the way maybe you take like a very small piece of fabric and just see how the fibers lay on it. Then you can dry the paper and then get a small piece of it and you'll test the properties of it. So you can test how strong it is, how much it weighs, the thickness. We want nice, thick, strong paper without having to use too much fiber. So they'll take the properties of it. And then based on that, they'll say, okay, this is what we're going to roll out as the next new and improved line of toilet paper. And they, some places will even go as far as to make miniature machines or miniature lines that kind of replicate the whole process. So you can see what it's like on the small scale.
And test it out at home, right? You give it to your, okay, you guys go test this one out. This is what we're testing this week.
Yep.
Oh, that is
okay. So cool. I want to go, this is fascinating. I want to go back to something you said in the middle, and I don't know if it was a real comment or if it was just kind of something that you said, but when you said, if you get two ply, you know, if you have that expensive toilet paper, is two ply not necessary? I've never felt like a fancy person in my life, but I do have two ply in my house right now. Am I going overboard?
Right. So that's a good question. It not necessarily. So if you have a single ply, it's a little bit tougher to get it just as strong and just as durable as that two ply. But if you use enough of those strong fibers, you'll be able to attach them to each other a little bit better. So really what two ply is just giving you what, you know, you couldn't get if you had to use less fibers in the one ply. So if you have a one ply product, you would have to use, you could have the same strength, the same softness, but you have to use double the amount of fiber.
Huh.
Right. Okay.
So I would imagine it's a personal thing, like whatever you feel comfortable using and paying for, right?
Right. And a lot of times we'll use one ply products just as a cheaper alternative to the two ply if that's sufficient for people to use. So you're not paying for that double strength, you know, double softness. You know, we need it to break down and once you use it anyway. So some people, you know, need to have systems that will break down fiber that'll break down easier, paper that'll break down easier.
Think about that. Like septic tanks and stuff, they might need to use not the really, really thick toilet paper or something.
Right. Or a lot of times if you have a younger kid, someone who's potty training, someone who's just using toilet paper for the first time, you don't want to buy two ply strongest, you know, most expensive toilet paper you can. They just want the nitty gritty stuff. In that case, you probably don't even need it to be that soft. You just want it to be.
I mean, sure.
Okay. I don't think I've ever asked a personal question on this podcast before. Feel free to skip over and not answer. As a chemical engineer who develops toilet paper, do you use one ply or two ply?
I've unfortunately been around making it long enough that I can only use the good stuff now. I know the difference. I know the difference. And I wish, I know I can see too well the difference. The amount of times I've been in my bathroom and have been inspecting the paper to see they could have made this a little softer, or this isn't the soft quality I'm used to. I have an expensive taste now, but not everyone will have that. I'm around it every day.
That's like me watching a movie. Sometimes it drives my husband crazy because I'll be like, this plot line, oh my gosh. And he's like, I'm just enjoying it. Can't you just let me enjoy it? But since I'm a writer, like, you have to look at the plot lines and all this, the character development. So it's the same thing with toilet paper. Although now I'm going to have to go look at toilet paper in our bathroom. I think we have two ply as well.
Right. I know. Well, I might have ruined it for both of you too.
Well, no, now I was just thinking you didn't ruin it. Now I have professional backing for spending the extra dollars on, if that's what the expert is using, babe, I think our heinies deserve the same.
Right. And the other thing to think about too is that if you have single ply, you can get more sheets wrapped up into that roll than you can if it was two ply, because it's thinner. So you are getting more product in a sheet or in a whole roll really than you are in sheet count.
And now that I'm thinking about it, so you guys have standards for the size of the rolls that you produce, right? So you try to make sure that X amount of, squares or whatever end up on a roll that goes in there. Because when you think about it, like, you only have so much room in your little toilet paper holder thing. Right?
That's exactly it. Yep. So we'll only make it that certain size, no matter if it's one ply or two ply, we'll make both, but they'll be the same size and we'll do it. You're exactly right. Based on, how people can get it in their toilet paper holder. And then really you'll get more sheets on the single ply than you will on the two ply.
Okay. So since we got to the sheet count thing, I do want to jump out of the chemical engineering for a quick second and have you answer a question that I don't know if maybe you work with a mathematical engineer. How come toilet paper packaging now all states 6 rolls but equal to 18? 4 rolls equal to 72. 7 rolls equal to, I don't know what you bought last year. Why is there math on the outside of toilet paper now?
So you're referring to a very special kind of math, and that's what we call toilet paper math. So that's going to be...
You actually call it that?
We do.
That's awesome.
So usually what that's referring to is, it's pretty interesting. It's the way we package the rolls into the pack. So it'll be referring to the sheet count in the roll and then the size of the roll, depending on how many rolls you'll get in that pack. So you can get a pack with 18 rolls or 12 rolls or 16, but if you get more rolls, they might be a little bit smaller than if you got maybe 12 compared to 18. So it's comparing different sheet count. And sometimes if you have a smaller roll, you'll have smaller thickness of paper. So the way they got it smaller is maybe even the same sheet count, but a little bit less thickness.
I mean, okay. Who knew? Toilet paper math. It's a thing.
Well, and it's real. I thought it was the marketing geeks were like, hey, you know what we're going to do on the outside?
Well, I mean, maybe it is, but it kind of works, doesn't it? Right? Like when you go buy it and it's on sale, you're like, look, I just bought the equivalent of 36 rolls, for this amount of money.
Right. And I think the marketing team is counting on not everyone having a degree in toilet paper math. So you might be onto something there.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. A degree in toilet paper math.
I mean, why not? I think that's a good way to get kids to do math. So, okay, now I want to back way up. When did you decide to be a chemical engineer? How did that come about?
So I actually, my mom was an electrical engineer. So I knew I was kind of involved in the engineering side when I was younger. I just loved math and science. Didn't really know what to do with it, but always knew I loved problem solving. And then I had a great, great chemistry teacher when I was in high school. Yeah. And she was like the first teacher I really connected with and really made me love chemistry and just love the problem solving side on chemistry related. But I wanted to do something very hands-on, very really in the problem, figuring out solutions to things that I didn't understand. And to me, that was less chemistry and more chemical engineering. So
yes,
when I studied it, yep, I got the chance to really solve some awesome problems when I was in college. And from there, I wanted to, you know, find a job that allowed me to be just as hands-on. And this is where we are.
That's awesome.
That's a very cool story on putting together those different pieces of the puzzle to end up where you are. And it comes through that you just enjoy what you do, that you can tell that you are solving problems and taking what you've learned and applying it to. Because how many people, how many grownups are working in jobs that they didn't study or train for?
A lot.
Just because it ended up being a better choice. A lot of times that's the salary, but you knew what you wanted to do. You went after it. You started with, okay, is it going to be chemistry? Nope. Turns out chemical engineering. That is a cool story. So now I want to ask, did you know you wanted to get into like materials? I don't want to say the softness of toilet paper, but did you know you wanted to get into materials, the materials side of chemical engineering?
I think I did. I think what I really went off of was what I didn't connect with as much in some of the chemistry side or some of the chemical engineering side was things that maybe just was on a smaller scale. So right. Chemical reactions that's very, very molecule based, very charge based, something that is very, you know, you're not really going to see, you might not even get to see any reactions at all. Like in, you can see with any sense. So I really liked the bigger picture side of it. You know, maybe you don't know why this reaction happens, but you know how to use it to get from, you know, what you want from the next point. So just that larger scale, big picture kind of thinking was really what I was interested in.
I like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I know you've done some outreach in the past. So do you have anything to say to maybe girls or boys who want to go into chemical engineering, you know, or maybe, I don't know, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade? Any tips for them or anything?
My best advice, and this is something I didn't do when I was younger, I definitely regret it and think it would have helped, is just getting as involved as you can with any type of math, science clubs at your school. Okay. There's definitely outreach programs near you. Any school programs you have, colleges, local colleges will have science camps, math camps, because I promise there's people there who are just like you and have the same interests in math and science, and it'll make you feel a little bit more connected and give you, you know, the confidence. The more you practice it, the more confidence you'll have in doing it, and the more you know you'll want to pursue that and want to take it on as a career.
That's great advice. I love that.
It really is. So jumping to the other end of advice to our listeners who are still students, do you have a dream project that you would want to work on as a chemical engineer? New food for astronauts going to Mars. I'm a space guy. Is there some sort of a dream project you would want to work on in the future?
That's a good question. I think the more I work on now, the more I want to make projects more sustainable. So really whatever I can do to use, especially big corporations, it's very hard to, when you're trying to make something cheap and, you know, as economically feasible as you can. Sometimes it's easier to take the route where you're using more fossil fuels or more chemicals that are harmful to the environment or harmful to, you know, animals in the environment near you. So one of my goals really is to make sure that I'm making products that are, you know, using renewable resources and moving towards chemicals that are going to be safe and, you know, healthy for the people working around them, because that's, you know, that's something you want to care about the people you're working with and just support you know, we don't want to cut down all the trees to just have unlimited toilet paper. You want to be able to-
Very true. Very true. Great okay. answer. So we're at the point in our show where we ask all of our experts, do you have a challenge for our listeners?
This is going
to
be good.
So I would challenge our listeners to go home, take your roll of toilet paper. If it's 2-ply, you can tear those 2-plies really gently apart, maybe just a couple pieces, so your mom or dad, you know, doesn't yell at you for tearing apart the roll. Just take it, look at the inside, feel it, see how it feels. It'll probably be a little bit rough, a little bit different from the outside, then compare it to the outside, and then see, you'll feel lint, kind of fuzzy surface. Maybe some of the soft, fuzzy parts will stick to your fingers. And you can even take that and compare it to your printer paper, compare it to a roll of paper towels that also will have 2-plies. It'll feel a little bit rougher too. So see if you can see really where that softness is coming from.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to do that. That's pretty cool.
I'm imagining our listeners like rubbing stuff on their face, like all over the house, like printer paper, pick up a notebook. I think this
your
is
sense
be a
of touch
challenge.
Is the best one. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, I think that's awesome. Well, this was fabulous, Madison. I learned way more about toilet paper than I ever knew before. So thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids.
Thank you, Madison.
Of course. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
What a fabulous conversation that was. My mind is simply blown with how much science goes into my toilet paper and yours. Huh, Jen?
I mean, do you ever think about that? Right?
Not even close. Not even 2% of what she just shared with us was any of us thinking about. That was fascinating. That's why we do Solve It for Kids. I loved it.
Right, me too. And I mean, I did chemistry, but I had no idea the amount of chemistry that goes into making toilet paper. So we hope all of you go out and do Madison's challenge, because I'm curious to see who has single ply versus 2-ply versus multiple ply, whatever, bath tissue, and how it feels and how strong it is. Are you going to do that, Jeff?
Oh, absolutely. Not stopping at the bath tissue. I am definitely going to be pulling out the paper towels.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm also going to be comparing the stuff that I have at home for bath tissue and paper towels with the stuff that I have at work for bath tissue and paper towels. I am too fascinated now.
Oh, this is going to be so much fun. So we hope that if you go out and do our challenge, that you'll tag us on our social media, which is at KidSolve on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget to check out our website, which is solveforkids.com, where we'll have more information about Madison. And we're going to see if we can find some cool stuff about toilet paper to put on there.
Absolutely. And just in case this episode didn't pique your interest enough, that there are some amazing jobs out there that none of us knew were going on, listen to us next time on Solve It for Kids.